Hughes.
And I call this meeting of the Houghton Community Council to order. Could we have a roll call, please?
Bill Guggins.
Here.
Laura Hine.
Here.
John Kapler.
Here.
Kathleen McMonagle. Betsy Pringle.
Here.
Elsie Weber.
Here.
Rick Whitney.
Here. Our agenda tonight includes looking at the minutes, council member reports, comments, requests from the audience, and then we have a presentation by Kathy Anderson about how to stay out of trouble in email. And then we have unfinished business on the green codes, fast track zoning code, and South Kirkland Park and Ride, followed by administrative reports, if any. With that, as far as our minutes go, could I have a, oh, yes.
Well, before, can I add something to the agenda?
You sure can. Well, it depends. What do you got in mind?
A party. No.
Well, that's definitely on. What?
Just a discussion point on something that happened at our joint meeting with the Planning Commission. I just have a question for staff.
Okay. Do you want to just add that to the end of the meeting then?
Sure.
Is that most of, okay. Which also, that reminds me, and one of the things we did talk about at that hearing was we talked about the possibility of going through some of the wording changes that had been proposed, but I'm guessing that people didn't bring their paperwork from that, so I guess we'll just take care of it on the 14th, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. So, back to the minutes. We have, could I have a motion to dispense with the reading of the minutes?
I move to dispense with the reading of the minutes.
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, so anybody have any additions or corrections? Anybody have a motion to approve the minutes as presented?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor of approving the minutes of the May 23rd, 2011 meeting, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, minutes approved. Council member reports and comments. I have several, but I'm going to let you guys have yours first. Anybody have anything?
I have a question.
Okay.
Are you going to bring up with Paul about the...
Yeah, I
what happened and why we didn't get asked.
Yeah, what Betsy or Elsie is talking about is there is a question about miscellaneous zoning code amendments that we approved late last year. One in particular related to schools that are not located on arterials, and that was something that we had a person, a constituent, who asked how we could approve this, Elsie's checked into it, and she's not seeing where it was included in what we had considered. It came in later in the process, and there's a question of whether we were even aware that it had been added in. And so Paul is going to check on it, and hopefully he'll identify at what point it came in and how it was brought to our attention. And so we'll definitely cover it. And maybe you could
sounds good.
Get that sometime in the next week or so, Paul, do you think?
We'll try. Both the people involved were on vacation this week.
So. Oh, okay. Well, then we could wait till they get back from vacation.
And I think we'd also like to understand what the repercussions of that change was to the zoning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also, like, how it affects the school,
right,
and the neighborhood. Yeah.
Yes.
Also, Paul, before I leave, I have the Planning Commission's hearing thing here if you want to look at it.
Well,
he'll make you look it up.
He'll have easy access to all
the
this.
The hearing thing?
What?
On ICS, you may, or? No.
On the miscellaneous zoning code amendments, yeah. On
there. Phase two.
Yeah. Okay, any other council member reports? Yes, John.
I have two. First is just a quick update for the council that the issues going on with Northwest University. There was a hearing examiner meeting scheduled and has now been postponed due to getting all the parties together. There is no date established yet for the hearing examiner. It will be established when everybody's schedules get put together. But I'll keep an eye on that and make sure that I report back to everyone. Okay?
I was done at the meeting, but is this about play fields?
This is about about the play fields, yes. Second item that I had is this Saturday I went to a stormwater walk around town tour that Stacy Rush, David Barnes had. I think it was very good. There was 25 or so people that attended that from various neighborhoods. A handful of people came from Seattle. I think they did an absolutely spectacular job. I want to commend them both for doing it, and it was a worthwhile trip for me. And we walked through some parts of town that I've never walked on before. That was kind of nice to see by foot instead of at car speed. So
cool.
That's it.
Let the record show that Kathleen McMonagle is in the building. Okay. Do we have any other council member reports or comments? The other thing that I had was Kathleen McMonagle. Kathleen, now what's your current status with us?
I am going to resign from the council because work almost always schedules me to be out of town the last week of the month when we have our meeting, and so I've missed the meeting. So, and I'll be out of town the end of July. But I've been participating in some of these, so I'll be here for the July 14th meeting, and I can't remember the meeting after, but I won't be here for the end of July. So hopefully you can post that opening and then have your interviews in an executive session and select a replacement. And the good news is I think there's been a lot of people involved recently, so, you know, with various issues, so hopefully you'll have some interest.
I think there'll probably be a lot of interest. Well,
I'll really miss the council, but it doesn't do much good if I'm missing the meetings.
Yeah.
And we miss you.
Yeah, we'll miss you.
Well, I'm sure I speak for everybody in expressing our appreciation for everything that you've done to support the community and the council over the years, and you're going to be sorely missed, and you are going to have to celebrate with us tonight. It's only appropriate. As far as interviews go, I guess we can, is this a time to talk about that, Kathy?
It can be, and if you would like to schedule the interviews to be held during your next regular meeting at the end of July, you can certainly do that, or you can choose to schedule a special meeting to do that at a separate time. So it's council's preference, and if so, then we'd need to coordinate everyone's schedules for another date.
I'm wondering if, since we are meeting for the joint meeting with the Planning Commission, and hopefully that's not going to be a real long meeting, if we could maybe try to schedule interviews before that? Does that make sense, you guys?
You're talking on the Thursday.
Yes. But we're already there, so we're not making, you know, we're not adding another meeting, because as it is, we already have two meetings set for July.
And what's the date of that
Thursday meeting?
July 14th.
14th.
The July 14th, is that too soon?
Well, we like to give about 3 weeks for the recruitment, and we won't be getting the recruitment out until later this week, so it cuts it a little bit short, especially given the holiday week.
Okay.
So, all right.
Then I guess
later in the month,
a regular meeting, we could maybe come in early to have interviews. How's that sound, everyone? Okay. So let's plan for that then,
okay.
Kathy.
Okay. We'll, so say 6 o'clock on that date?
Yeah. How long do you normally schedule for interviews?
Well, the city council isn't usually, when they do their board and commission interviews, are not choosing someone for an appointment to an elected office. And so their interviews are much shorter, only about 5 or 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing that the council will want to spend a little more time with applicants.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right?
Most likely.
So it'll depend on how many applicants you get.
Yeah, okay. Okay. We'll figure that out. Okay, so but anyway, plan for meeting coming early on that day then. Okay?
Okay.
We'll figure that out. Thanks, Kathy. Any other council member reports or comments? Okay. At this point, we have an opportunity for members of the audience to address us for up to 5 minutes. If anybody has something they'd like to say to us, please come to the podium. Give us your name and address. Going once. Going twice. Okay. Then, Kathy, you're back up with a presentation on email for boards and commissions.
Actually, I'm going to let Matt Cruz, the new desk supervisor, start with the nuts and bolts of how your accounts are going to work.
Okay.
Is that mic on?
So, my name is Matt Cruz. I'm soon to be the supervisor of the service desk, otherwise known as the help desk here at the City of Kirkland. I this evening created all of you folks' email addresses within the City of Kirkland Exchange server so that all of your city-type business here within the Houghton neighborhood can be taken care of through our email system. And there's a few reasons for that. One, to kind of keep city business within city email, which Kathy will talk more about here shortly. And we've made it hopefully easy enough for you guys that it's, as long as you can get on the internet, you should be able to check your email for the city business. I gave you two packets, or two things there at your desk. One is a brief overview, and I mean very brief overview, of what it is you'll actually be looking at when you log into the web Outlook access that we've given you. It is pretty straightforward. If you are familiar at all with Microsoft Outlook, it looks and feels very similar. It's just within a web page format. The second item I gave you was a sheet that has your name on it, what your new email address is, your username, and a password that I've created for you. That I ask that you change when it is available to change. With Web Outlook, you have to wait 10 days after creation before you guys can change it on the Web Outlook application, just because of how the security is set up on it. So after 10 days, you guys can change it to whatever you want. And there is a description there of the criteria that is necessary for changing your password. It's a little aggravating to folks here in the city. I know that they grumble a lot about it, but it is there are certain things you have to have within your password. It has to be 6 characters long, has to have at least one capital letter, has to have at least one small letter, has to have a special character like a number or the pound sign or dollar sign or whatever. And it can't have any part of your username within the password. So hopefully that makes pretty clear sense. And I've posted our email address and our direct phone number for the help desk. So if you have any problems, any questions about accessing the email, you can call us Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. We do have voicemail, so you can always leave a message and we will get back to you as quickly as we can. I don't know if you guys want to see it in action, because I can put it up really quick to give a quick view if you're interested in seeing that, but it's pretty straightforward. Anybody?
If it's pretty straightforward, does anybody feel the need to?
No.
Yeah. No.
Used Outlook.
Again, we're available and friendly, and we'll definitely help you as quick as we can. So, all right.
Okay. We'll hold you to that.
All right.
Matt.
Yes.
One comment real
Absolutely.
Quick.
Absolutely.
I must have really provoked somebody at the city, because I didn't get the little sheet that has my password and my name. And
should be at the bottom of your...
Yes.
Hopefully. Oh.
Hey, Matt.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Okay. I'm glad, because I
you know,
thought I got everybody.
I put it in the wrong pile. Huh?
Okay.
Okay.
Maybe you should go through that, Alan.
Thanks, right. Matt.
You bet.
Good evening, Council. I'm Kathy Anderson. I'm the City Clerk. I think most of you have already met me. And I have given you a handout also. It's called What is a Record? And so that's just a quick cheat sheet. Now that you have a city email address, you will be able to... It'll help you when you're choosing what you're filing, what you're keeping, what you can throw away, what you can delete from your city email account. So the first thing I'd like to address is, now that you have your city email account, you'll want to set up a filing system within that account so that you can retain the email that you receive according to the proper retention. And I can follow up with you or answer questions anytime as far as how long you need to keep things. And there are different ways of doing it. Some people do it by month. Some people do it by project. Some people use a combination of both. Anything that's going to make it easier for you or someone else to find email quickly if you need to respond to, for instance, a public disclosure request. And one of the main questions we have is, what can you delete? And so transitory records can be deleted. Things that are just quick and informational, things that are for your use only, just notices from the city that you'll get that, you know, of events or that your packet is ready or things like that. And one of the things that this gives you the opportunity for is to now create a bright line between your personal and your city business correspondence. So we hope that you'll take this opportunity, and when you receive email from the public or from citizens on issues, I don't know what the quantity of that traffic is currently for you on your personal email accounts, but you should go ahead and forward that to your new city account and then respond to it from the city account and notify those members of the public that that is the correct email address for them to address you, to sort of stem that flow through your personal account. We also want to make sure that using your city email account, you are reminded that you can't use that for any political activity. So anything that's campaign related for yourself or for others, you want to make sure and not use that for posting personal views on public sites, personal opinions on public sites like blogs and things like that. And you wouldn't want to set up a Facebook account using that city email address.
Why not?
So those are all things that 'll just lead to trouble. And I think that's about all I needed to cover, but I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have. Elsie?
Kathy, I have a question. Huh? Is the City Council using this already?
Oh, the City Council has had email addresses forever.
Forever? Mm-hmm. And they don't have any problem with getting it organized and all that?
I can't comment on that. I think that they...
You mean you won't, or you can?
I think that, like any other staff person, they have their challenges as well. No, I don't think anyone is perfect about it.
You're going to be in your office all next week? Well,
except for the holiday.
I'm just kidding.
I should be, yes.
Kathy, is there a... I guess one of the things that concerns me is managing people's expectations, because like right now, if I get anything, it seems to come through on my work email, and which I'm accessing all day. Uh-huh. I'm so happy to have this city account, but I don't want to have to check it five times a day or even once a day.
And one of the things that you can do is to set up an automatic response.
Okay.
And that could let people know that you only check that account on a periodic basis.
Okay.
And you can set what that timeline is.
Okay.
And that if they are in need of an immediate response, you can give them some sort of alternative contact, either staff or...
Okay.
Your regular email address.
No. So, okay, so that's, it's okay. I mean, we are not obligated then to daily check in or respond to these.
No.
Okay.
No.
Thank you.
And it's at your discretion.
Okay, thank you.
Kathy?
Yes?
I already have two separate accounts, one that I made up for the city and for all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just going to cancel that one out. Can I transfer anything from that account to this new account that I was trying to save?
Just forward it.
Just forward it.
You can forward it. I have one small concern. If it can just reside out there for a bit, and if you'd like, I can take a look at it again to see what's in there as far as retention, because you do want anything that's city business related that has a retention value to stay in its original form because of public records laws regarding metadata. So once you forward those original emails somewhere else, that metadata changes, And so if we were to get a public records request, for instance, you would want to have the original record with its original metadata.
So I'm better off just to keep this account and kind of just keep it where it is?
You could just keep it where it is and just let it go sort of dormant. And I can give you some guidance on whether the content that's in there has much of a retention, and then I can tell you exactly when you can delete that stuff and close it out completely.
Okay.
Does that work?
Who would be the best staff person to contact for us to put in an auto reply with, say, a phone number or an email?
That would be the planning department.
Probably Nancy Cox.
That's what I was thinking. I just wanted to verify that. Thanks.
Any other questions? Thank you, Kathy.
Okay, you can call me anytime or send me an email from your account. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, we will move into the green codes. David Barnes making a presentation.
Can you hit laptop for me? Good evening. While we're kind of letting this warm up, just kind of the last time we met, we didn't have any draft language for the electric vehicle infrastructure, and we didn't even have a concept for the clustered housing LID concept, and that's what I've brought tonight for us to look at and discuss. Presentation will basically, we're just going to follow along on this, and we'll walk through issue A3, which is electric vehicle infrastructure, answer any questions, receive comment, and then I have an example of a low impact clustered housing, how it might work a little bit, and we'll move into that. And as we're going through those two issues, if you notice any things you need to clarify on the other issues, that's fine to bring them up too. Then we'll just move through it.
Okay.
Okay, on page 3, we've got issue A3, electric vehicle infrastructure, and the direction that we received from the state is that we were supposed to allow electric vehicle infrastructure in all parts of the city except for residential, critical, and resource areas. We don't have resource areas, but we do have residential and we do have critical areas. State created a pretty nice model guide for local governments, but there was still a lot to figure out regarding where are appropriate places for this infrastructure, you know, even though they don't require you to allow charging stations in residential areas. So And as we look at page 3, where we get into the definitions and so forth, those definitions are mostly borrowed, and they were from this model ordinance in this guide for local government. So they were suggesting that most jurisdictions do that, so that we have kind of the same language from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. However, like I mentioned before, where jurisdictions to choose to put some of that infrastructure is variable. Is there any questions about page 3 and then going into page 4, the definitions at all, that anybody wants to?
I just have two little things.
Mm-hmm.
At the very top of page 3, KZZ 5.036, over in the proposed code language?
Yes.
Okay. You've crossed out solely petroleum, but it seems like the sentence is incomplete there.
It is.
Okay.
I'm working on... From the last meeting with the Planning Commission, I was asked to kind of strike that, but I haven't found another thing that I could add in that makes it make sense yet, but I'm working on that.
Does not rely solely on petroleum products or something like that is what you...
Right.
Okay. The other was down at the bottom, under the proposed code language,
mm-hmm.
It's down at sentence 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, sentence 6, it says, which meet or exceed... any standards, codes, or regulations set forth by chapter. And that any was throwing me. I didn't know if you meant, even if you just meant one of the codes, or if you just meant the codes, you want it to meet all of the standards, codes, and regulations, or just one. It says, I'll let you
read it.
Okay,
I see what you're saying. Okay. This was exactly borrowed from their language, except I added in the actual RCWs for reference.
I just wondered if maybe the word the should be, because you must meet or exceed any standards. Or you mean all the codes? Do you mean all the codes are standards?
Well,
I think they're referring to electric vehicle standards.
It seems to be focused on RCW 1928 and 27540, doesn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the way I read it. So.
Yeah, but any. But I don't know how many standards, codes, and regulations are in that, but it sounds like if you meet any of them, but it's I would think that you would want to meet all of them, all of the codes in RC.
I see what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying?
The word the is better there.
Huh?
Yeah. The word the might be better there.
That's what I was wondering. Instead, you want to meet
instead
codes.
Of any.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, instead of any.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
That's all.
Meet one and not the rest. Yeah,
yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It could
be. Right.
That's a good catch.
Thank you.
So we're changing any to the...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had a minor question.
Sure, Kathleen.
So on page 3, the new definition for HOV, I just wanted to ask about motorcycles on the preferred parking, because they're allowed in the HOV lanes and included there. So are we excluding motorcycles or including them to be consistent? Or?
I didn't have an opinion.
I just thought
right.
It would come up.
Right. I don't think we're excluding them on purpose. I actually had a slightly different definition last time, and I suggested by a planning department to put in whatever the minimum might be. But you're correct, you know, that a motorcycle can travel with one person in the HOV lanes. So I will look at that, and if we can amend that and make that work, then I don't think I meant to exclude them.
David?
Yeah.
I don't think motorcycles and bicycles are compatible in a bicycle lane or HOV lane.
We're talking about parking.
We're just talking about a definition right now.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just definition of parking.
Okay,
parking
with just voicing my opinion.
Yeah. Well,
I agree that motorcycles and the bicycles shouldn't be in the same lane.
Okay. Yeah. All right, any other...
Hey, David, could I ask you
just a quick question on that, David?
Yeah.
These station 1, 2, and 3, which I imagine all three are for-profit organizations... you know, like service station, that sort of thing. They're not allowed in residential zones. Has I suppose if you're going to run out of gas in a residential area that's really far from a gas station, you're going to run out of electricity or some other sort of miracle tablet you put in some sort of magic tank to make an engine move. I'm just wondering, has this group that has reviewed this thing thought about proximity to neighborhoods? Or was the not in residential code just because things like this generally aren't allowed in residential codes? And it's really just a question.
I'm not really sure why they didn't, you know, why they didn't say it should be there. If we go to attachment 2, where there's pictures of the different levels of chargers in your packet, there's a level 1 charger that shows pretty innocuous little box that kind of sits in somebody's garage. It's not meant to be a for-profit venture. It's meant to allow a homeowner to be able to, you know, juice their car up overnight. On the second page of that attachment, there's some level 2 charging stations, and those, or they have a little bit quicker charge, but those are the kinds of chargers that you might see more or less in commercial areas, mixed use, shopping centers. They show a picture of, you know, a parking lot, and those would be probably a for-profit kind of venture. And I believe City Hall is actually going to have a few chargers here too in a little bit. On the last page, it's got the rapid charging stations, level 3. Those are, you know, like 480 volts or something, like some really high charge. And, you know, those might not be appropriate in, well, those aren't really, they are not appropriate in a residential area. And so part of my issue, what I've been tasked to do, is kind of find out which part of this electric vehicle infrastructure, you know, figure out what be more appropriate in what areas, and then bring that before you to look at. But I don't really know why, you know, they said that the, you know, when they define electric vehicle infrastructure, they include those charging stations. They also include battery changing stations too in that definition. But I'm not really sure why they've, you know, not said, yeah, you should have these level 1 chargers in residential zones. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So
I guess if you run out of electricity in the neighborhood, completely kaput, strange neighborhood, you have to just call a tow truck to go to
one. No. Let me clarify this. All the state was saying is that you require it in commercial and office zones and industrial zones. You're allowed to have it in residential zones, but it's not required by the state. So you have the discretion to make those choices. Right. I think they're trying to be sensitive to the residential neighborhoods.
So you could have a level 3?
If you want to, as a local jurisdiction, you can make that choice.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
But they weren't mandating that as a state.
Okay.
So.
I see.
Okay.
So do you see any problem with having the level 1s and level 2 charging stations in the residential areas?
Nope.
It's not the high voltage, high traffic kind of thing.
Nope.
Also, to answer your question, John, I mean, I think that the charging stations are going to get so sophisticated, you're going to be able to pull out your smartphone and find one.
Yeah.
That's kind of where they're going with these subscription services and so forth.
So are you envisioning having a separate building? Like in residential, I mean, something looks like a little garage someplace. There would be a charging station or something?
Like in a residential setting, there could be a charging station sitting right in front of a parking spot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just there. And it may be used, could be used for residents of the parking area. That's probably what it would be used for. But, you know, some of the more commercial areas might have these charging stations that are more rapid and that they actually charge a fee to use. The rapid charging station, you know, is something that, you know, might not be appropriate for those areas, but may be more appropriate for, say, a gas station or service station or a place where cars are worked on so they can actually charge that battery quickly.
Right.
And my sense over time, it's going to get more sophisticated and get smaller and more usable and more and safer, and pretty soon, you have a rapid charge in just a few minutes, I would think,
We'll probably have this whole underground society of people that have these little things they'll clip onto the wires that the buses run on, sit there for 5 minutes, and then unclip them and all.
Oh, I've already been there.
Okay, I think we're in agreement with you. As
okay.
Far as,
yes.
Yeah. Great. Are there any other comments on the electric vehicle infrastructure anybody would like to make?
Any questions, comments? Looks pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you had a question here on 115.33 on page 6. Do we want to allow its vehicle service stations? And I would say, yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah.
Thank you. It makes sense. You know, I mean, that's where batteries could be changed now, and now this is just another type of battery.
Okay. Cluster housing?
Let's go on to cluster housing. So generally the concept we're looking at here is we're trying to commingle a few different things, and that is clustering houses together on a specific maybe part of the lot, preserving more of the openness of the space, and also using low impact development techniques, which actually require you to have some of that open space. And some what I've listed here is, you know, we have some cottage code, and that actually requires certain kind of housing to be built, and using low impact development techniques. Public Works actually has a requirement that you now divert 10% of new impervious area on a site towards a low impact feature. And so with what we're suggesting here with this cluster housing concept. LID concept is that that we go for a higher percentage of low impact development and utilizing that cluster concept together to achieve it. And that's something that's different than what we have right now to look at. And so we thought after discussing with Public Works, who kind of has their finger on the pulse of what the Department of Ecology is recommending for the future, that a requirement, if somebody chose to use this incentive program to divert 50% of the stormwater from new impervious surface towards an LID feature, that would be a good requirement to achieve. It would be above and beyond what we require now. And at least for the next few years, it would be above and beyond what the Department of Ecology requires. And so, starting on the top of page 13 and then going on to page 14, we look at some of the possible incentives. And the first incentive that's mentioned there is allowing a reduction in lot sizes, potentially up to 50% of an underlying zoning, but no less than 3,600 square feet. And so we're not talking about increasing density on these projects at all. We're talking about clustering housing, keeping the same number of units, but just allowing them to be closer together. Kind of some of the things that goes along with that as well are reduced driveway widths, more shared driveways. That's going to help reduce the amount of impervious surfaces, reducing setback yards possibly, looking at maybe reducing access road widths, but obviously making sure that we make sure, you know, emergency vehicle infrastructure can get in there too if they need to. Some of the requirements we've suggested, like I mentioned earlier, diverting 50% of water from the new impervious surfaces to the LID features, cluster housing, shared driveways, and for a 9-lot or less clustered housing LID plat, we would suggest a process 1 review. And then obviously if it was more than 9 lots, it would be a process 2A. That's what we require for short plats and then plats. Here's a typical example of how we might see this work. And I just chose 7,200 square foot lot, although I realize there's only a few places in Houghton that actually have 7,200 square foot. But this is a good example of how it might work. If you had a 7,200 square foot lot, we're suggesting that if you divert 50% of the water from the new impervious, that would probably be, if you maxed out the lot at 50% lot coverage, would be 3,600 square feet. 50% of that is 1,800 square feet. And right now, like I mentioned earlier, only 10% of that is required to be diverted towards a rain garden, splash block, other pervious surfaces. But this is typically how it could work. Somebody could install a rain garden, a 350 square foot rain garden. That would handle 1,400 of that 1,800 new square footage of impervious. They could do a pervious driveway, and that would handle 400. Those two things alone could handle what we're suggesting as the requirement for this clustered housing concept. However, you know, rain gardens don't work on every site, and you can use splash blocks, and those are those blocks that sit underneath your downspouts and divert water towards a vegetated, just a flow path. It could be grass, it could be other vegetation. It doesn't have to be a rain garden. And one could do two of those and achieve 1,400 square feet. You know, their patio could be pervious pavement or pavers or any of the other kind of LID features that are discussed in the King County Stormwater Manual. So that's kind of how we see it as working. And we wanted to propose something that was far more than we're getting right now, but not making it so onerous that nobody could achieve it or nobody would even try it. And showing some of these, you know, techniques that people could use to manage that stormwater on site, it does seem very doable. So I was wondering if what kind of thoughts you had on that, and there's discussion points that I've shown up here for our discussion, and if you want to start out with any comments, feedback, wherever you are with this.
Can I add a couple of points here too?
Sure. Yeah.
Because I think we originally started out looking for what are the trade-offs to promoting LID type of techniques, and how do you incentivize it? And it became more difficult because more and more ecology is making requirements, so it's getting stringent, more stringent all the time, and we're seeing a lot more specificity with the standards. So I think we approach it from the standpoint, let's maybe try to enable this, facilitate this, make it work better. So that's kind of the philosophy behind it. Secondly, when we brought this to the Planning Commission in terms of this lot size issue, what's the minimum lot size you need? We were kind of struggling with that, and the Planning Commission said, well, let's just do the 50% of the lot size per zone. So 8,500, it's 42, 25, yeah. 7,200, 3,600, 12,500, 6,250. So the idea is that'd be the standard. So it's kind of a sliding scale, and that's still subject for discussion, obviously. But I think they hit upon something that might work fairly well from the standpoint of promoting the clustering approach.
Paul, but if you're, let's say you have a 5,000. Well, let's say you have a 7,200 square foot lot, but your home doesn't cover 50% impervious, then you wouldn't have to do any of this because you've already.
So how that would work is, I was just making an assumption for simplicity's sake that people on a 7,200 square foot lot would kind of go up to their max, which you know, maybe 50%, that would be 3,600. If you chose not to cover that much,
yeah.
Or you weren't building that much, then you would not have to divert as high a, you know.
Would you have to divert anything? I mean, does the 50% lot coverage trigger this, or is it the size of your house?
It's the 50% diversion of the water that triggers this.
It's the new surfaces that you're going to have to treat that weren't being. There wasn't anything there before.
Right. Okay.
Is how that
What's
works.
The size of the house.
Well, really, it's just the volume of the water that you're trying to deal with. So it's based on that standard that you can do the clustering approach. So that if you
and
divert...
this is only for clustered houses?
Yeah.
And do cottage houses count as clustered houses?
But they are automatically already have an LID feature as part of the cottage ordinance in the standards.
And I'm suggesting you don't have to do a cottage housing in this, you know, kind of concept, because we do already have, like Paul mentioned, something like that.
So I had a question about density. So the intention wasn't to increase the density, you know, just to leave the impervious surface. So is there any part of this that says that you can't then develop on that open space in the future? You know, you can't come in and say, right. Oh, I want, now that I have 3,600 square lots, I can fit four more houses in here and do infill or something.
Well, I mean, if you have density in, that's, you know, 7,200, for example, you can't, and 7-6 dwelling units per acre, unless there's provisions in the comprehensive plan, you can't just change that.
If I understand the question, I think what we'd probably do is create some sort of easement or tract or something on the plat.
Yeah, I didn't see anything.
Yeah, that would reserve that area. We haven't come up with the specific standards yet, but the idea is to make sure that's maintained there in perpetuity, so that they don't come in later on. So I'm going to put a deck on here, or I'm going to add a, you know, an addition. So that's a very good question and something we need to follow very closely. So to make sure that does happen that way, and it's doing the function that it's supposed to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Question two. Mm-hmm. We just got through making zoning for PL3 down in Lakeview, and the smallest lots were to be 5,000 square feet. So if they build a clustered or a cottage thing there, is that going to be able to drop to 3,600?
I think we're going to try to make an exception for PL3C, so okay. Because that's so unique that we're going to have to look at that, and we don't want to create, you know, confusion on that, yeah. On that approach. So,
thank you.
Right.
So, one thing that I didn't see in here, and if I missed it, please point it out. Mm-hmm. Land planning, I'm going the opposite way. I'm thinking, what can we put underground as opposed to let it sit on the ground for infiltration? So we don't have these issues of, oh, we're going to cover it up with a deck later, that sort of thing. One of the challenges often is the geotechnical engineer will determine this place is better for infiltration than that place, but it's not convenient with the way the lots work. So I wondered if there was a way in the clustered housing to allow infiltration to happen on somebody else's property with some sort of use agreement for infiltration, so you didn't have to create a separate tract for it, which would reduce the overall square footage of your property. It might allow flexibility on how to get infiltration. Because that, when you're trying, you know, it's a really difficult thing to figure out where can we infiltrate, and it's just not always conducive with where our lot lines are.
I hadn't really considered that, but it's a really interesting question. I'm going to note it on here. We do know many places in the city that do infiltrate really well. And I'm suspecting that, you know, if we're able to get this code on the books, and that when we have these pre-submittal meetings with the applicants, that we will be looking at geotechnical reports and working with Stacy and Jenny, you know, because we want to make sure these techniques work wherever they're employed. But there may be other issues beyond that that I'm not aware of yet, but I will look into that because it's a great question.
Because that's a good idea. It's creative. Other ideas, other questions? Yes, Kathleen.
I had another question. So we've been talking about the Yarrow Bay Business District, you know, and the zoning on that is 100% lot coverage. And so when I looked at this for the impervious, it was like, oh, that's a good idea, except why on the really big lots do we not have anything?
We're really talking here single-family residential development. For this approach.
It seems like it's much more stringent for the single family than the big development.
There's more opportunity to cluster, for one, but there are other requirements I believe we're trying to incorporate in terms of LID into parking areas and some of the landscape areas, so they have some room to put those in. But, yeah. But there, you're right, there are some zones, like downtown is 100% lot coverage, so the
right.
Chances of that is nil, but at this point, that may be something in the future we're going to look at. But like I said, again, DOE is becoming more stringent upon their requirements, too. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like we should be adding stuff into mm-hmm. Yarrow Bay Business District instead of just 100% lot right. coverage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, in the Business District we have water quality controls, even with 100% pay.
That's true.
And we also have storm detention.
Exactly.
But what we don't have that the LID stuff gives is the recharging of the groundwater. Mm-hmm. And while we may not have a lot of things growing in the ground and something that's paved 100%, that there's other stuff around it, and it does help prevent quick release downflow stream through pipe. Yeah. So I think that's a good idea, Try and encourage that. That's a great idea.
That'd make a bigger difference when you look at how the city is.
I'm sorry. We'll talk with Stacy about that and see what we can come up with there and where we go.
Any other questions, comments, ideas?
Oh, actually, we do address it on page 17, internal parking lot landscaping requirements. So there are some additional provisions there. Bottom of page 17 and top of page 18. This is internal parking lot landscaping 95.44. This is a reference point.
Okay.
You had some discussion points on page 14. Did you want us to oh, there we are. Sorry.
I put them up here just for ease, and I can move from this page to the next one if we feel like we've gone through this, or I don't think we really have gone through this, and if we want to talk about it. And
My guess is that whatever we think isn't really going to matter so much, as I understand you're going to be going through meetings with developers and other people. Didn't you have that listed here that you were going to have stakeholder meetings to get feedback?
I'm going to go back to the technical advisory group that we started with, too.
They're the ones that you have to really determine whether it's going to make sense to them and us. You guys have any objection to that? I'm not saying that we necessarily will agree with it, but the starting point is mm-hmm. find out what they're saying mm-hmm. it takes to them for them to make it worth their while, and then we have to decide whether it...
But we might want to give a clue as to what we might not go for. I mean, I'm looking at this, would bonus density or height be an incentive, and I think that we would probably not want to have bonus density or incentive for...
Yeah, I mentioned that for future iterations that we weren't suggesting bonus density or height with this at all. Mm-hmm. But we're just curious if that in the future that might be something that we should or could look at.
Jump page 14.
Yeah.
Well, I guess to follow up on that, I just had written down two comments.
Okay.
Is my thought process. The first is on page 8. It appears that swimming pools are still excluded. I'm going to make my play one more time. I believe that's a mistake. Just so it's part of the record, David.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's duly noted. I'm very aware of that.
Page number 9.
I have a swimming pool, and I totally agree with you.
That's two.
You've been holding out on us all these years.
I may have to ask for a straw poll here.
I might have to ask for a pool party.
It's not very usable. It's already there.
Okay.
Can I ask a question, though?
Yes.
What if we said outdoor swimming pools that don't have covers? Would that be okay?
I would say no. You can't say covers, because some of the covers self-drain into the pool, some of the covers drain out. You'd have to define it as pools without covers that add to the water surface load of the
right.
lawn. So any pool cover that's within the gutter system, is going to drain back into the pool.
Right, which would overflow into the sewer versus go into our storm drainage system.
Pervious pool covers.
I'd have to think about that.
So would you support language that if we were able to write it that way?
I'm going to get a lot closer if you do something like that. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
Okay. The second item is on page 9. It talks about exemptions.
Yes.
And then it also talks about the King County Swim Manual, the Surface Water Design mm-hmm. Manual. Now, I believe that the Surface Water Manual has kind of a varying scale, that this piece is 80%, this piece is 72.3%, this piece is XYZ. I want to make sure that we don't fall into the unintended consequence here that somebody that is permitted last month as a legal definable lot coverage, they used pavers, but they're the wrong kind of pavers. They did everything they could to get to the maximum coverage that they can, and the new Surface Water Manual comes out and says, oh, well, that's not really the right paver, as to where last week it was the right paver. And then automatically they're not in compliance would preclude them from doing any sort of remodeling to their property that they had planned on doing it because of the way they calculated things. They were going through good LID thought processes.
Right.
And then the manual says, whoops, we've changed our mind on this kind of or that kind of paver. It doesn't have the same rating anymore because. So some sort of language in here about existing now I can understand that if it was asphalt or something like that. I understand that. But not if somebody tried to use good LID. It was permitted that way. And the LID standards kind of changed out from under them.
So standards in effect at the time that they make their application or whatever that.
Essentially, yeah, but specifically to, and again, I know because it's sort of the policy that when people make changes to the property, that's the time where new regulations kind of, that's the gotcha. Now you have to comply. Even if you complied 50 years ago and the rules change, you gotta update now. But I think that's different on the LID standards when somebody is legitimately, over the past 10 years, is trying to do something to meet these low-impact development standards. Now as further science is happening, these standards are moving all over the board, and what we thought was great last year, it's not so good now. And I'd just hate for somebody to step in that bear trap. So
we can look at that. That's
we will definitely look at that.
A little bit complicated.
I agree that that's right. You know, good because somebody's trying to do the right thing, yeah. And then now they're out of compliance somehow.
I don't want to tear up $50,000 worth of pavers to put in pink ones when blue ones don't work.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Don't do that.
Right.
Anything else? Okay.
Did we touch on this? Did you have any issue with if, say, a 7,200 square foot lot, and for example, you could go down to 3,600 square foot? Would that be acceptable? What lot that small?
On a clustered basis. I think we understand that just on the cluster.
Yeah.
With the easement. Of non-development on the
right,
and no change,
right.
And no change in density.
Exactly.
Right, no change in density.
Yeah, just to be clear for the record, this does not apply for the PLA.
Right. Does not.
Paul said it didn't.
Okay.
Didn't you?
That's their intent.
That's our intent. We need to see how we want to encourage LID in PLA 3C, so we need to kind of figure that out too. But I think the idea is not to apply these specific standards in that case.
But I think there was another discussion point or something in that area on page 14 where they talked, this planning commission talked about relaxing the FAR, but I would say not, I don't know, if you've got a small lot already, I would think you would not want to relax the FAR.
We met with the planning commission, uh-huh. And one of the things they suggested was to have like a scale. You know, if you do have a much smaller lot, then maybe your FAR is shrinking. You know, so it's all things are equal. Yeah. But, you know, the planning commission obviously suggested in some cases, you know, on smaller lots, removing the FAR. And, you know, so we're trying to take all the comments and figure out what might work really well and bring that back to you in a draft code format for our next meeting.
Okay. Anything else?
Would FAR apply in Houghton?
Yeah, I was wondering why that was.
That was a point I was going to make, that they could if you apply it with these type of regulations.
That specific, but, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We're also going to maybe try to do some illustrations or some graphic layouts to show you how lot sizes might play out on this, and some lot layouts as an example or something to graphically look at.
Yeah,
so
that'd be good.
Right.
So just to comment on that again, sort of my continuing comments on FAR. If you have a zone and you're the 7,200 square foot, but you cluster it, you're going to have enough open space to, I think, mitigate the FAR issue. If you look at a lot of some really big homes that are on bigger properties, the usable footprint might be really tiny because you've got native areas around it. And in a clustered housing, that would kind of be the same thing. You'd have a lot of property because you're only allowed so much density for the property. And if you clustered everything down in one corner, you'd have a tremendous amount of open space around it. I think that would...
But you could have a bunch of really big houses real close to each other. Sort of like in the Meriwether property.
That's the whole idea of clustered housing.
What else? Yeah. But I mean, not having big houses next to each other.
I don't think the houses of Meriwether are that big. I guess it's relative.
Well, they're... pretty so, packed in
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
But I think John is right. That's kind of the idea, is to compact, tight pack a little bit some of those units. So you do have those other areas that are left open to make the LED function properly. Now, we're struggling with this, and we'll have to talk about this more. How do you average the open space or lot coverage requirements? You know, could you do that over the entire subdivision or short plat? But then you again have to have some sort of easement or some language that said they can't develop that. So it's a little balancing act how you put these things all together and make it work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there will be some houses that are close together. I mean, that's
the concept. No. I don't mind that. But I mean, like the picture that you showed at the beginning was quite nice, and there was all this green space. But if those houses were twice as big as they are in your drawing, it would be a very different environment.
Okay. I understand.
So seeing something graphically that would show, you know, here's the maximum lot. The maximum size house that could fit, and if we absolutely push that to the maximum, what would it look like?
Yeah.
Okay.
And these will be fairly blocky diagrams, so don't
that's
get your hopes up about
that's
a lot.
Worst case scenario.
Okay.
Okay. Good. All right. Okay. Next steps.
Next steps. We'll bring back some draft code for clustered housing and some of those examples, those graphic examples. And, I don't know if we really have any additional draft code for revisions for EVI, but I think we're pretty good there.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
One more thing. We are looking at a joint public hearing down the road, October 13th. Just to note that as in terms of the schedule. So that would be another joint hearing with the Planning Commission.
Okay.
That could change the date.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Okay.
So I need to find my other staff people here, so I'll be right back.
Do we get a 3-minute break?
Yeah.
All right, 3-minute break. The timer is on.
Oh, nice.
Better be with us tonight. No excuses. I'm doing my best.
Hi, Phil. How are you?
Good.
3 minutes.
Huh?
3 minutes, huh?
What the heck? You got the 1 hour. These guys are good.
How are you doing?
The only reason I let it go is because if we don't have staff, I guess we can do things for a lot of fun. So,
lots of different things, like different places to go.
Last place is just like
sleep.
But I was a
different types of people.
I had reservations,
short
hotel,
just
car.
Right.
It's not very interesting. It's pretty sad. I've never done that before. You know, I had a plan that far along, and I literally canceled it Friday morning. I was supposed to leave at 9, and I got up about 6:30 and said, you know what? I just can't do this. I would spend the whole time in San Francisco on the phone conducting business, and it was not straight up. If I'm going to do that, I might as well
spend it. Oh, no, the cue sheets.
No. No.
What is going on?
Everything's fine with me.
Oh, there she is. Okay. All right. I only got 1 minute.
Where's your counsel?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I gave them one. They got 1 minute to go. I'm going to go get the hook and start the purge in.
So would that be what would happen? Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I just worked on it. Well, you know, there is another.
Did you look at it, see what it was? Is that the city's laptop or your own?
5 seconds.
Three, two. If we take any chair, it'll be okay. Just take the closest chair.
Okay, call this meeting back to order.
Okay, you press control.
So, how do you like your
floor is yours.
Oh. I guess I'll do that again. Call the meeting back to order, and Joan, the floor is yours.
I didn't see anything in this. Are we not doing the fast track?
Where do you want to go today? Hasn't somebody already taken that?
There you go.
I thought it was just one that was up for a second.
Or was it, which one?
Okay. All right.
Oh, thank you.
Let's go.
Okay. Good evening. Thank you for having me present this evening. This is the Fast Track Zoning Code Amendments Project. This is something that the city does annually. We get together a variety of zoning code amendments that are pretty straightforward, have little policy implication, are meant to clarify the code, do minor adjustments, make it more consistent internally. And tonight I'm here to have you review them and then also make a decision on whether you want to hold your own hearing or a joint hearing with the planning director or none at all, depending on if you have questions or concerns about them. Mm-hmm. So if you do decide to hold a hearing, July 25th is the tentative hearing date.
Okay.
Just to summarize again, the eligible amendments of the fast track sort are, as the bullet point said, what I had mentioned before, not controversial, eliminate redundancy, etc. And the roster was approved by the City Council on the 21st. So now, if you would like, I can go through the
Let's do this
roster.
By exception in All the interest right. of time, Joan. And
Sounds good.
So just starting from the top, is anybody...
And many of these don't apply in Houghton anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say...
Yeah, I didn't see any problems with any of these.
Does anybody... I presume everyone's had a chance to review these. Does anybody have any questions or concerns about any of these items?
The only one I'm just... Maybe I need a little mind refresher. Is the... On the last page, Chapter 117, the personal wireless service facilities.
I had that one noted, too.
Concealment technology and modification.
Yeah.
It's like, what exactly does that mean?
Okay.
This one was came forward from one of the planners who has had an application recently, and apparently the technology for transmission of the technology, instead of needing to be housed in a structure, now they're making boxes that are like 1 foot by 1 foot and in size, and they are able to be located on a building within a parapet on the other side. They are apparently very non-intrusive, and the code does not address these at this time, and so we're trying to keep up with the technology and allow these types of devices to, if they meet our standards for modification and they are concealed properly, and we have criteria currently in the zoning code for that chapter, then we want to make some kind of an amendment that addresses those. So the intent is to keep up with the technology, continue to make sure that they meet the requirements of the code for modifications and for concealment. But again, they are apparently now being used anyway by the providers.
I'm just trying to get a sense of this in, you know, real person's language. I've got had neighbors approach me when they heard that there was going to be this cell facility, you know, constructed, and it was approved. And I contacted the planning department. They said, oh, it's all within code. There's nothing to be done. There's no notice to local people. But it's the one issue that has come up in my neighborhood that people have, you know, stopped me on the street and wanted to know what's going on with it. So what I'm trying to understand is, does that mean that one of these cell towers that would otherwise be a cell tower that would be really visible and taller than the telephone poles, that is now able to be? No.
Okay. It's some type of technology that works along with the cell tower. So it used to be, in the old days, it had to be housed in this big structure, and apparently rather than having to do that, now in some cases, I guess, it can be housed in a small box-like containment and then placed, located on an existing building or structure that actually it minimizes the impacts.
It minimizes the impacts of the attendant structure, but not
the antenna, correct.
And does this allow like an increase in capacity for that?
I'm not sure.
The same amount of, because that's another concern, is the EMFs and what's being you know, beamed into the area.
Frankly, I'm going to have to do some research and draft the amendments and be able to give you more of an information on that. But it's something that's being used now, and it's actually apparently just it'll help in the modifying of existing cell or cellular services.
I think the important thing is that what you're saying is the concealment criteria is still going to be, we're going to be protected as far
that's
as that
right.
goes, right?
And
by the existing concealment.
And, to speak to what Rick is saying, then I think you need to take the comma out
after
technology.
Yeah.
Because I think that's kind of what's throwing it.
Right. Concealment criteria is not still going to be applied.
Definitely what threw me.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So with that, I think we're okay with that. Anything else? Anybody else have anything that they saw that caused them any heartburn?
I wrote down two little things,
and
maybe they're nothing. But on this whole wetland thing, removing trees, I'm like, does that really even need to be said? Because I think it's in every other code around everything.
Oh, I know. But see, when we change the definition of land surface modification to no longer address tree removal, then it's sort of silent. And if there's any question, we need to put it back in the code.
Right. Makes sense.
And then the other one was just on appeals. And I did not understand the chapter 142 to 145. And I'm sorry, Joan, I didn't take the time to look up those two chapters.
Yeah. Apparently, there is no explicit direction in the chapter 142 regarding process. And we need to be very explicit for all involved, for the public and for us. It's a requirement that they follow the process one, which is the hearing director decision process, in both appeals and judicial appeal. And so it refers back to those processes that are stated in process one.
Okay. Yeah, that got it for me.
So does anyone feel a need to... Oh, Kathleen?
I was just going to give my opinion on the electronic reader boards.
Right.
So in Houghton, so it's had different things up there, the time of day, you know, websites, things like that. And it's like, if it's not being used for public service messages, could we have them turned off?
Seriously.
You don't want to be driving by and have people trying to write down a website, does it?
Where are those?
At the fire station.
At the fire station.
Yeah, look.
It's distracting, yeah. I think. I think it's dangerous.
Yeah, there was a lot of discussion about that, too.
Yeah.
When that went in, about what it was to be used for.
Yeah, we didn't think it was supposed to have this stuff that moved. And.
Well. Yeah, I'm curious about that, too. So far, I'm just getting a little bit into it, and there's a policy that's being developed by the city manager's office on what should or shouldn't be on the reader boards, and I perceived that it was public service only, but I'm not sure how they're going to decide what that is, but I think that kind of information I'll be presenting when I draft the actual amendments.
So, Joan, are you telling us if we decided to have a hearing, we wouldn't have all the information anyway, right?
Oh, yeah. I would be having for you the drafts of the amendments and a description of what they are. So it'll go to you regardless, that memo.
Does anyone feel compelled to have a public hearing on any of these topics?
No.
Hearing none, carry on.
Okay, thank you. And
thank
we
you,
will
John.
Send you the memo that will go to the planning director when he holds his public hearing.
Great.
So you will be in the loop for sure.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks, John. Okay. Dorian is now going to tell us or give us our final chance to take action on South Kirkland Park and Ride.
Okay, the purpose of the meeting tonight is for the Houghton Community Council to have an opportunity to consider the three ordinances that were recently approved by the City Council and to take final action on those ordinances by taking action on Resolution 2011-3. And the ordinances include 4307, which covers the zoning code and zoning map amendments, 4308, which are the municipal code amendments, that's the design guidelines, and 4310 was an amendment to the use zone chart that was approved at their more recent meeting. The first two were approved on June 7th, and 4310 was approved on June 21st, which was a correction to a special regulation, and I'll go into that in just a minute. Whoops. So there have been many meetings and study sessions over the past few months. In January, as you know, there were the two public workshops where we collected input and talked about the concepts, and then in February, the Planning Commission and Houghton Community Council held joint study sessions and developed the draft amendments for the park and ride, and then we took those and presented them at another public meeting in March, and then held the public hearing on the draft amendments on March 24th. And then that was followed in April by individual study sessions by the Planning Commission and Houghton Community Council, and both eventually unanimously recommended approval with the on the amendments, both with some changes. And those recommendations with the changes were forwarded to the City Council, who took action on June 7th, and they approved all the amendments with all of the changes recommended by the Houghton Community Council and the Planning Commission. And so tonight, that's where we are with the final action. So quickly, the amendments that were approved include a change to the zoning map from professional office to this new YBD, Yarrow Bay Business District 1 zone, down in purple in the corner. The new zoning regulations to Chapter 56, which will be where the Yarrow Bay Business District regulations are housed, and this is the first zone there, and then other minor changes to the code, and then new design guidelines for that are unique to the park and ride site, or YBD1. So since you've last seen these amendments, the changes that have been made include incorporating all of the recommendations from the Houghton Community Council in April, and those can be found in your packet. You've probably seen all of these, but the building height reduction in the gateway is now Special Regulation 11 on page 12 of the packet. The change to the upper story setbacks, which now require additional prescribed setbacks on the second and fourth stories, and that's Special Regulation 10. And then the requirement for an additional public pedestrian-oriented space in the gateway area between the street and the building is Special Regulation 9, and it's also in the design guidelines on page 31 within the gateway guidelines. And then the Planning Commission had recommended a change that will increase the standards for the through-block pathway through the parking area, and eventually the hope would be that those standards would also be incorporated into the pathway through the Bellevue portion of the site. And then this is the change that was made by that last ordinance, which was really just to correct an error to the standard regarding the range for affordable housing. So originally it said a minimum of 10% of total residential units shall be affordable at 50% of median income, and the intent was to allow a range. So the words "no greater than" were inserted there, just to allow up to 50% for that 10%, and then the other 10% is still the same, up to 70% of median income. So the next steps are following action by the Houghton Community Council on Resolution 2311-3. These changes would then be incorporated into the zoning code, municipal code, and zoning map, and at that point King County would be in a position to issue a request for proposals for future transit-oriented development there. So,
I have three very small things.
Okay.
Because I wasn't at the hearing, and I apologize for that. I know that this is about the TOD, but is there any language anywhere that says that we really get those 250 parking stalls on?
Yeah, actually, okay. In the use zone chart, we added, I think maybe just around the time of that meeting, there are two special regulations that really try to, you know, they really make it clear that that's part of the package. And so... Okay. See if I can remember.
But it does specify that we will have that total.
It does, and specifies that this parking for this is in addition. I'm trying to. Mm-hmm. I want to show you the actual regulations. Do you see those numbers?
Is that in the zoning?
Number 17, is that what you're looking at?
Yeah, it's the last two special regulations.
Right. So 17 and 18.
17 and 18, it says, this use must be part of a development that includes an increase in the number of parking stalls available exclusively to users of the park and ride. And 18 is parking stalls to serve the use must be in addition to those provided as part of the expansion of capacity of
right.
the park and ride. And King County is bound to provide 250 under
their grant
requirements.
And the I've seen a draft of the RFQ, and it specifies that as well.
Yeah.
Okay, but it doesn't need to say it in here,
It doesn't.
Think?
We're not the enforcers of the grant conditions,
okay.
but what we're saying is that this is in addition to what they're doing, so it can't all be shared.
Okay. The other thing I missed, I know it speaks to the affordable housing. I missed where there was like a sentence that said the most of the units are somewhere it kept it from being 100%.
Oh, yeah. Market. That was actually another action that the City Council has taken, which is because we can't have a limit to that in zoning. So okay. that is incorporated now in the municipal code in a change that was made there, and it says that
okay.
that's
no more
the
than.
The tax exemption.
Oh, yeah.
Multifamily tax exemption.
It what?
That's part of the multifamily tax exemption
okay.
policy.
Yeah, which okay. anyone proposing that development would take advantage of.
Okay. And then the third thing is just a wordsmith. On Special Regulation 10, on page 12, this is really, 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 really picky, but since we're voting on the zoning language, right down in the middle of Special Regulation 10, there's a sentence that starts, or the line that starts, Kirkland/Bellevue city boundaries shall provide, and I comma, and then I think it says a minimum. I think it should say at minimum, upper story, right?
Okay, hold on. That's part of the, that's all one sentence.
Mm-hmm.
It just falls on the next line because it's such a long, so
right.
let's, it has to, it starts at any portion.
Right, but it's, right. But I think what I'm trying to say is any port, they shall provide, does it
oh,
mean at minimum
at,
upper
at
story set?
Oh, it should say at a minimum.
Yeah, at a minimum, yeah.
I see. Oh, yeah, thank you.
That's
I think that's a Scrivener's
error. We can take care of
it.
That's just a typo. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, John?
I have one question that's the design guidelines say Yarrow Bay Business District,
mm-hmm.
and what we're dealing with tonight is really the transit-oriented development site specifically.
Right.
We have another Yarrow Bay Business District set of design guidelines that is currently under our hearing.
But they have the same design guidelines.
Well,
don't they? Nope.
We don't know that yet because the hearing's not over.
Oh, right.
yeah, this is just that Ordinance 4308. That ordinance, now the way it was written, we won't need to revisit the municipal code again, I think, for the remainder of the Yarrow Bay Business District design guidelines, because the language says that now the Design Review Board has the authority to review guidelines for the Yarrow Bay Business District. So it's a generic, even though the only ones that exist are YBD1.
Well, but so what you're saying is it's a generic inclusion in whatever the design guidelines end up being. I mean, if the intent is to approve this tonight to send it off to an RFP, you'd think that there would be transit-oriented development design guidelines that would go along with it changeable.
They do. They follow. In the packet, there's this blue sheet, which is kind of the generic cover sheet, and the placekeeper for the future ones, and then that's followed by the next page are design guidelines for Yarrow Bay Business District 1 zone. So that's now what would, if this is approved, what would be in effect. And what is, that's made in effect by that ordinance.
Shouldn't just that section be part of the approval tonight then?
Well,
that is all that there is. Mm-hmm. That's
it's
all
just
that exists.
The cover sheet.
Cover doesn't say that.
The cover sheet will be for the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But we're only talking about YBD1 right here.
Okay.
So maybe they should take off the cover sheet.
We could. The city attorney made me make the cover sheet. So it's just that
it needs to be of a similar format and an actual document that is referred to, because this document is not part of the code and it's not part of the municipal code, so it needs to be, it's basically a freestanding document that has authority only through this new reference in the municipal code. So it needed to have a cover so that it's clear what it is.
But we are only...
You're only approving the YBD-1.
YBD-1.
Yeah, exactly. That's what follows, and there's no other text for Yarrow Bay Business District.
Okay. I'm sorry I was confused that it's confusing to me.
Yeah.
It is confusing.
did you want to add to my confusion, Paul?
No, it's confusing. But just to note that we have referenced the vision of the Yarrow Bay Business District in the RFQ-RFP process, so they and links to the website so they can see what's being talked about, what's proposed, how that fits in with the rest of the area. So we're that's important to us.
Yeah. Any other questions? If not, we... Chair would entertain a motion.
Do you have to have three motions or one?
Yes, we've got
three motions or one motion for all three. What do you?
The category is
one resolution.
Yeah,
I think
right.
One resolution approving the three ordinances right. is what we right. really need. Yeah, unless we have a problem with any of the individual ordinances, which I don't think we do.
Who wants the honors?
Okay. Anybody?
I so move that we approve Resolution 2011-3, approving Ordinances 4307, 4308, and 4310.
Is there a second?
Seconded.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any further discussion?
I have some further discussion.
Okay.
Really, from just recording as part of the record, I want to make it clear that I was very disappointed that the City Council segmented this particular process and took it outside of the neighborhood group. That was a big, big slap in the face to all the participants that worked very, very hard on the neighborhood process. I understand why they did it. I don't think I approve of why they did it. I think it's really a shame. It fractured our group right at the end at a critical time. And I think at the end of the day, will damage how the neighborhood plan ended up. I am going to vote yes on this. I need to say that through this whole process, the neighborhood group had some objections that I think were very, very good. We're still not exactly sure, even though we have a memorandum of understanding with the City of Bellevue, we still are not exactly sure what they're going to end up doing on that site. There's traffic concerns. There is traffic and affordability unknowns here, something that's never been tried before. So we're moving forward on a leap of faith. We still don't know exactly what's happening with the rail trail issue and how that's going to be connected through the City of Bellevue. I am really hoping this turns out to be something that is good and not something that ends up being a mistake. I think we need to rely heavily on the design review board to ensure that the intent that everybody that's worked so hard to make as a gateway for our city actually does become a gateway for the city and not a stubbed toe that we look at every day as we drive into our wonderful neighborhood. That's for the record.
All very good points. Any other discussion? Discussion? All in favor of the resolution, indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? It's approved.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for all your work, and especially for how you tried to promote the public process that we asked. And I know that it was a challenge to do it in the time frame that we did, but I think you did a really good job of trying to get as much public participation as possible on this, and I think that it turned out to be a better project because of it. So
I appreciate that.
Thank you, guys.
And thank you, Marilyn, for helping with this.
And thanks to the members of the audience who are part of the process as well. We won't be having to see you around for a while, but thank you for all your efforts.
Yeah, this would not have happened without you two participating and being very thoughtful and clarifying on all the elements. Both of you did an excellent job in working with everybody.
And we know that you're going to do a good job and make it turn out right. Right, fellas?
And, of course, now the fun really starts.
Great opportunity.
It's just a warm-up.
Yeah. So, good luck, and make it a good one for us, okay?
Looking forward to seeing how it turns out.
Betsy, you said that you had one other thing you wanted to add to the agenda.
I do. we had a joint hearing. We had a joint hearing. Paul, this is for you.
Oh, okay. I'm here.
We had a joint hearing with the Planning Commission, seemed like just a couple of days ago, and we've been through months and months and months of process. We have been through months and months of public notice. The hearing had been closed to oral testimony, and somebody on the Planning Commission brought up a suggestion of a rezone that was radically different than anything that had been discussed through the entire process. And there was no notice, you know, and I guess what my question is, could that have gone forward?
I think we would have recommended you take a break and bring back the proposal and notice again and put up the signs and get it, you know, played out and go through the process in more detail.
Okay, so that couldn't have gone forward at that point.
Yeah, I think we're subject to a lot of criticism and challenge on that.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. That's what it was.
And as I recall it, it was subject to some of that during the meeting.
I was thinking this cannot be good public process
Well, as you probably recall, he didn't have any support from the rest of the Planning Commission either.
Exactly. Right.
So, right. But that someone would even think that they could bring up something at the end of the public process like that was scary to me.
Wow. So, free speech.
I guess.
It didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Okay, so with that, unless you have any administrative items.
None from this.
Meeting adjourned.
Woo. Record time.
And I got a new email account.
Woohoo! Kathleen, do you have a place of preference for celebrating your
microphones are off.
Tenure? Yeah, microphones.
Just checking. We're adjourned.
Is there music down at Wild Rover? Should we go somewhere else?
Well, there's definitely music Monday night. Over on Monday night. They've
always got often it's really good. You just can't hear.
It wouldn't be conducive for conversation other than if we went in the back of the bar, then you can carry on conversation back there. And then if you got a wild hair and want to go out to dance,
I don't think that'll happen for me.
I think what Rick meant to say is if you would follow my lead and wanted to come out and dance.
Is that what you'd like to do?
Oh, I was just thinking that close. The beach house is fine with me. The place to read the I don't know. The
cactus?
Cactus is good. I like cactus.
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 It's your
party. It's early enough. It's good.
Cactus.
Oh, you want to come?
Anywhere but there.
What you got against cactus? Oh, you're just being silly. You're being your John silliest self. Uh-huh. Okay, so cactus. Cactus it is.
So I'm wondering.
Right. Can we change the zone?
What would preclude something?